Tonight, let's do John 10. Just go verses 1 through 6. So, Uncle Dave, we'll start with you.
Okay.
And see, Levi isn't here. In case he's listening online, I'm going to pick on him for not being here. He was telling me he missed you.
There
you are here tonight, and he didn't show up. So, Levi, if you're listening, you should be here, man. All right.
And call.
Yeah. All right, John 10, beginning in verse 1.
Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber.
But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. The stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers.
This figure of speech Jesus spoke to them, they did not understand what those things were which he had been saying to them.
You know, guys, there's some benefits, for sure, of our Bibles being broken into chapters and verses. But there's also some maybe disadvantages. You know, it's really handy for actually being able to get to a place you want to find, right? You're not just saying, John said, and you got to flip through the scrolls and find them. But one of the disadvantages, and I notice a lot, if I'm memorizing Scripture, I have a tendency to memorize a chapter at a time. And I realize when I read it, my mind does the same thing. It breaks. It stops there at the end of a chapter. And sometimes it automatically, my brain assumes it's a whole new setting. In the next chapter, sometimes it is a whole new setting. It's a whole different situation, a whole different scenario. But, you know, if you look at this, you get who remembers John chapter 9? What was the end? What's the way that John 9 ended up? What were, you know, of course, the blind man was healed and all that, but what was kind of the ending of this? Matthew.
Jesus was calling out the Pharisees for saying that they could see.
Yeah, Jesus was calling out the Pharisees for saying that they could, hey, we're not blind too, are we? Honestly, I love interacting with kids. You learn so much about adults. You know, you have a situation, you have a scenario with kids, and they'll be like, not me too, right? Who are the ones that usually say that? The ones that are guilty. And adults are the same. Usually they're a little better at cloaking it, but it's the same thing. We're not blind too, are we? I think there's something built into human nature that we all kind of want a pat on the back. We all want a little affirmation. I find it interesting that some of the false teachers in this town, I'll just leave it in general terms, you know, their interaction with me, what they really want more than anything is me just to say, brother. Hey, brother. Patch up. Yeah, hey, you know, we're all on the same team. These Pharisees that are tagging along with Jesus, they're kind of wanting that affirmation from Jesus, we're good. That's where it ended here. And then, so it's right into that. If you look, chapter 9, verse 41, Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But since you say, we see, your sin remains. Truly, truly, I say to you, all the stuff we read tonight. And then verse 6, this figure of speech, Jesus spoke to them. The conversation started earlier in response to this. What? So Jesus is, understand, big picture wise, I guess I'll let you guys, before we go through the details here, if you think about that, John 10, 1 through 6, what's Jesus driving at? Just big picture. What jumps out at you? I probably should have done the intro first, then read it, and then asked you guys. I'll give you a second. Think about it. I want a little bit of input here.
Well, he's bringing forth what's been talked about by the prophets and the Old Testament there, you know, because it's brought out that the people were the sheep.
Exactly.
And there were sheep herders, and they weren't speaking the things of God, and they were leading the sheep astray.
Yeah.
God called them out on it, too.
Yeah, he does. Jeremiah, Ezekiel, both those prophets, very seriously call out the false shepherds, don't they? So, do you think these Pharisees are familiar with some of those Old Testament passages about the shepherds? So, you remember I like it, towards the end of Jesus' life, one of the parables he tells about the kingdom, and just, you know, what that kingdom's going to be taken away and given to another people, producing the fruit of it. You know, and it's like this, you know, they understood that Jesus was talking about them. I mean, these guys are sharp enough. They're catching what Jesus... So, you're right. Jesus is taking scriptural concepts there from the Old Testament. He's driving it home to something. So that's excellent big picture. What else? What else? Anything else jump out at you guys in this? Sure.
Ephesians 4:4.
One Lord. They're one right way into this thing, isn't it?
That's right.
So, guys, I'm just going to emphasize this for a second. I know we, most of us here know this, but we live in a society that is very... We're trying to celebrate diversity. But what we mean in... There's only one way we can celebrate diversity. And that's through the unity of Christ. But people mix up what diversity is. And the way that they come to diversity is there's no unity. There's all these different paths that you can take. That's the way we're going to make everybody okay. It never works anyways. But Jesus is very clear. There is one way. The New Testament church, sometimes guys, we're accused of being this little cult here in town. Because we say there's one way. Jesus says there's one way. Here in John 10, that's a great point, Jared. Ephesians 4 says there's one way. The early church in the book of Acts was known by people outside. They called them a sect known as the Way. They thought they were a cult. The Way. But if you're going to follow, I don't mind being a cult. What's categorized as a cult, as long as Jesus is our cult leader. He's the way. He's the door. And he's making that very clear. Good point, Jared. That's a good start, I think, guys, to kind of go in and start working the details here a little bit. So, you know, the problem with these Pharisees, and Jesus says, you guys, as long as you say you see, your sin remains, what you had a case here was the blind leading the blind. There's nothing new here. In a spiritual sense, the blind are oftentimes willing to jump up and lead the blind. You see it in any organization. Even people that have a lot more talk than ability to walk. A lot more, oh yeah, bravado than actually confidence. What did Jesus say about the blind man who leads a blind man? He didn't say their eyes will be open. They both fall into a pit. It's a dangerous place. I sometimes get a kick out of teenagers trying to counsel each other. Don't you love social media? Their ability to share their problems with each other, give themselves encouragement of understanding each other's issues. I don't doubt they understand each other's issues. What I doubt is that there's any solution. Wonderful. The blind leading the blind. I mean, but it's indicative of people, mankind as a whole. And so, nothing new here. Jesus is calling these guys out on this. And, you know, Jesus, when they claim to see, Jesus' response, as long as they think they can see, their sin remains. And guys, Jesus ties this in with blindness, I think is really important. Back to John 9. What did the blind man say, you know, when asked about, you know, well, this guy's a sinner? He said, I don't know whether or not he's a sinner. I don't know. But one thing I know, I was blind, now I see. And he says, ever since the beginning of time, has never been heard what? Somebody's opened the eyes of the blind. Physical blindness, if it's Like, it's legitimate physical blindness. There's no cure for that.
Sorry.
What were you going to say, Jerry?
Yeah, they're actually...
Yeah, they are working on some stuff. But throughout history, there hasn't been. Hey, Jesus comparing sin to this. Because once sin gets into that heart and worms its way in there and digs in there, there's no human cure can get that thing out. We have all sorts of programs and medicines and all that. There is no hope for the human soul other than Jesus Christ. And Jesus is making that point. When sin works in there, you aren't going to get out of this on your own. Any more than a blind man is going to make himself be able to see. So Jesus is trying to help these guys understand their need for a Savior. Important for us to understand that same need. So then Jesus moves on from there, and that's his next point. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. We'll work on that here a little bit. Let's go back to Ezekiel real quickly here. Mr. Simpson had mentioned Ezekiel 34 is a prophecy against the shepherds. And then Ezekiel 37. One thing about it, when you see the prophecies against the false shepherds, there's usually a... Hey, there is going to be a good shepherd. There is going to be a good shepherd. And Ezekiel 37, verse 24. I don't know who we left off with here, but... When you guys get there, Mrs. Love, how are your eyes in this light? Can you crank out verse Ezekiel 37, 24 for us?
My servant David will be king over them, and they will walk by one shepherd, and they will walk with my word, and keep my statutes and observe it.
Okay. Guys, is David... When this statement's made here by Ezekiel, is David, is he alive, or has he already lived? Is he dead? Is he alive at the time? What's the timing here on this? Was David before Ezekiel or after? Is what I'm asking.
Before.
Okay. So David's going to be king over them. David of prophecy, you know, when we're talking about after the fact, David ruling as king over a future kingdom. Who is David in of prophecy? Matthew. Yeah, that's a pretty easy one, right? The Christ, the lineage of David who's going to be a king. And there's going to be one shepherd. There is one shepherd. That's Christ. So, if Jesus is the shepherd, who would the sheepfold be? Tough one here. Let me see. Elena, if Jesus is the shepherd, who would his sheep be? His church. The sheepfold is going to be the church. Now, a little later in John 10, we'll get here. The church is going to be made up of two groups of sheep. That's going to be Jew and Gentile. But the sheepfold is the church. We don't have time to look at all these, but you can check it out. Acts chapter 20. Verses 28 and 29, when Paul's talking to the elders from Ephesus, and he talks about them shepherding the flock of God. 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter is exhorting, as a shepherd, he's exhorting other shepherds as elders to really follow the example of the great shepherd. And we're going to come back to that one. But in there again, he calls, I think I'm mixing up the terminology a little bit between Acts 20 and 1 Peter 5, but in both cases, it's very clear that the church is the flock. Okay? It's the sheepfold. And so, you know, the sheep of Jesus' pasture are his people. So this is a little complicated. When we look at this next week, you're going to see a little. Jesus is going to tell a different analogy that's related, but he's going to change the symbols a little. In this section, I want you guys to think about it. And let's look at this again. John 10, verses 1 and 2. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door, he's a thief and robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. We already established the shepherd is who? Jesus. So in this parable, guys, we're not talking about how we necessarily enter. There's going to be a parallel here. There's going to be some things we can learn. But we're talking about how the shepherd proves he's the shepherd. The shepherd himself has to go through the door. Guys, what was the door by which Jesus proved that he's the shepherd of the sheep?
Resurrection.
Exactly. Okay. Ultimately, it's through the resurrection. There's nobody else other than Jesus has been able to do that. Now, preceding the resurrection, there has to be a crucifixion. Okay. But the resurrection is the proof. Hey, guess what? If you can't rise from the dead, guess what you're afraid to do? You're afraid to die. All the thieves and robbers are afraid to die. They can't really lay down their life for the sheep because they know there's no resurrection. Jesus was willing to enter by the door to be crucified and then be raised. Nobody else can do that. And Jesus says it later, John 10, verse 15, I lay down my life for the sheep. Can anybody else say that? Like, hey, there's other people that might be willing to, but what does their life count? Let's say I'm saying, okay, hey, apart from Christ, I'm willing to lay down my life for you guys. Let's go. You see people in battle and stuff lay down their lives for their fellow members, their fellow soldiers. Hey, we're willing to do that. But can any of us, by laying down our lives, apart from Christ, could any of us ever open up the way to God? Can't do it. Jesus is the only one. His perfect life. I don't have time to go into all of that. Let's go to Hebrews 2 really quickly. Just two parts of this will hit real quickly. Hebrews 2 verses 14 and 15. So let's see, is that you, Elena? So I'll have you get 14 and then Blake, you want to get 15? Hebrews 2, 14 and 15. So Jesus, through death, he partook of the same, didn't he? It was essential for him to do that in order to free the rest of us who were stuck in the fear of death. That's the beginning of the story. What Cairo said really is the end of the story. Let's go to Revelation chapter 1. I would love it. We just don't have time. But you think about what Jesus did. Guys, the Hebrews 2 alludes to it, and Jesus tells some parables about it. Satan held each of us captive. He was like we were his possessions. We were his slaves. Jesus compares him to a strong man who's guarding his possessions. He held us all. And Jesus comes through stronger. I don't know what version you were reading there, Elena, but mine says render powerless, him who had the power of death. Yours says destroy him. Jesus says, hey, when somebody's stronger than that strong man, he comes in and he binds that strong man and he plunders his house. Through Jesus' crucifixion and ultimately through his resurrection, he went into Hades and he ripped the doors off of that place. He unloosened all the chains. so that we could be set free. And I like the way Revelation 1 says this here. Revelation 1, verses 17 and 18. Mr. Holland, you want to...
I saw him when I fell at his feet like a dead man. He placed his right hand on me, saying, "Do not be afraid. I am the first and the last.
I am he that lived and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Amen. I have the keys of power and of death."
Jesus holds the keys of death and of Hades. This is the resurrected Christ who has those keys. Apart from the resurrection, there's still no victory. There's no hope. There's no door. There's nothing for us to follow. And so, you know, Christ is that good shepherd by reason of his resurrection from the dead. Okay? So, you know, let me ask the question this way. Are there leadership voids in the world? Are there leadership voids? Let's just start with a very simple, basic unit, the family unit. Are there leadership voids within the family?
Yep.
All over the place, right? Now, are there people who are willing to are there people who want to be leaders?
Yes.
How about in a school? Are there leadership voids? Are there people who want to be leaders?
Yes.
How about at your place of work? There's always people who want to. How about in the church? There's always people who want to. But there's how many people have the abilities, and even more, how many people are willing to sacrifice to be the leader? That narrows this down real quickly, doesn't it? Scriptural leadership, guys, as exemplified through Christ, is sacrifice. Jesus laid down his life for the sheep. Philippians 2 says it really well. He left everything that he had and he laid himself down basically so we could walk over him to get there. Now, of course, God exalted him at the proper time, but he was willing to sacrifice himself. The Pharisees and Sadducees and others, they wanted to be the leaders. We talked about that a little bit in my group last week. They seated themselves in the chair of Moses. God didn't see them there. They see that they wanted leadership. But they weren't willing to sacrifice, were they? And so Jesus just flat calls them out on that. He calls them thieves and robbers. You're not willing to do this the right way? You're a thief. And you're a robber. I just want to make the point quickly. All scriptural leadership is going to be based on sacrifice. Anything other than that is not good leadership. That doesn't mean that, I'll just pick on me for example, doesn't mean because I'm an evangelist that I always perfectly sacrifice. Okay? And I'm thankful for sometimes when a few of you guys point out to me that I don't perfectly sacrifice. But there is a principle here that if there is not a pattern of sacrifice, that's not good leadership. It's self-serving instead of Christ-serving.
It's even found in deacons. It says, let them first be tested. I think it's still the core there, particularly there. Are they willing to do the sacrifice of the position of the deacon?
Excellent point, Mr. Simpson. Deacon, the word actually has to do with it's servant. You're willing to serve others. And so Mr. Simpson brings out a great point in the scripture. Deacons are said are first to be tested. Well, that would be true of all scriptural leadership. Okay? Let them be tested. And then if they prove that willingness to serve, okay, when there's no obvious immediate benefit, okay, then you're on to something here. Jesus himself was a perfect example that way. I said, you guys know the rulers of the Gentiles? They lorded over them. You ever had a boss like that? Want to let you know I'm the boss? Hey, don't forget who's the boss around here. I want to ask if any of you wives have ever known a husband like that. I figured out early in my marriage that if I had to say that I was the boss, probably something's wrong. Although I do have one of my favorite pictures of all time that my kids made me for me is one that Matthew wrote, and it said two, you know, to and from, and it said two, the boss of me. It's like, ooh, I like that one. That's still one of my favorites. But I didn't have, he was. I'm sure I reminded him that I was, but anyways. What'd you say?
Should we ask him if he'd like to affirm
that? I don't have to be anymore. Yeah. That's good. But, Jesus just said, that's not the way this works, guys. Real leadership, true leadership, and even in the world, good leaders are people who understand these principles and are willing to sacrifice, not to lord it over. Let's go to 1 Peter 5 really quick. Just this is for elders. Again, it's true. With Christ here, the good shepherd being the ultimate example, it's just 1 Peter 5, verses 1 through 3. And Mr. Schaefer, can I have you guys in your row just hit that one? You probably aren't going to be able to hear it online, but we'll do it. Why don't you take those three, Mr. Schaefer, all three, and just boom it out a little for us.
Therefore, I exhort the elders among you, as your fellow elder, and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sort of gain, but with eagerness. Nor yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock.
And of course they're following after the chief shepherd that he talks about next. So, you know, because the shepherd of the sheep, he has no problem entering in by the door. He knows who he is. The sheep know who he is. The doorkeeper knows who he is. By the way, who would the doorkeeper be in this illustration? If Jesus is the shepherd who has to enter in by the door and the doorkeeper knows him, who would the door... We're not talking about the sheep. The sheep know his voice. We're going to get to that. Who would the doorkeeper be? The Father. Anybody that's trying to run their own separate agenda, the doorkeeper says, not you. Not for my sheep. Okay. So I'm pretty clear. And if you think about, I want you to go back and think about the context here. Jesus works from that conversation in John 9 into John 10. He's just calling these guys out. Not only is he saying you're blind, but he says you guys are thieves and robbers. Because there is a lot of false stuff going on in the churches out there, and Jesus' word is still true. You're thieves and robbers. Most of earthly hierarchy set up within the churches is not scriptural hierarchy. Maybe even the right word would be scriptural lowerarchy, since it's about service, okay? Not about being above everybody else. Let's go back to John 10. Never seem to get to page 2 of my notes fast enough, so we'll get moving here. Let's work here on verses 3 through 5 a little bit. John 10, 3 through 5. To him, the doorkeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. And a stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Sheep are amazingly dumb animals. They need to be led. Might do us all well to pay attention to Jesus calls us sheep. You don't trust your own way.
Oh, I was just thinking about the sheep. Most of them look the same. So if there's somebody else there, they're not going to recognize who that is, if that sheep, starts speaking and they're not the shepherd, you know, they're going to see, they're going to hear, but sometimes they're not going to understand.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We're going to get into what Jesus says. The sheep hear his voice. They recognize the voice. Because wolves in sheep's clothing,
yeah, that's funny.
They look like sheep. Listen to what they say. And we'll break into that a little bit. I forget the... I wish I would have looked this up. I thought of it, and I was in the middle of something. But I remember an account I read somewhere of a... forget the kind of sheep. One of those big old sheep. They, when they fall over, they can't get up on their own. They cannot get back up. I think it's true of us. We need a shepherd. Okay? So, and good for us to remember that. So, this isn't a bunch of... Back in that day, in that time, in that place, we aren't talking about, a bunch of sheep being led by a sheepdog. We're talking about a shepherd who comes in all these intermingled flocks, and he calls his sheep out, and they recognize his voice, and they follow him. And yeah, Roger.
We raised sheep growing up, and an interesting fact about that is this is talking about like shepherds that spend time with the sheep. Just up in eastern Montana, there'd be people from Peru and stuff that would just camp out with the sheep for months. Up or whatever, and those sheep will come to their master. But like, we just had sheep where we had them in a pen and we didn't spend much time with them, and those sheep wouldn't come worth anything.
Yeah. That I think the guys probably online had a little bit of a hard time hearing that, but Roger makes a great point. This is true. The sheep recognize the voice and will follow the voice of the shepherd that spends time with them. And let's put it on terms of the sheep that spend time with the shepherd, because that's going to be some responsibility here on our part in reference to this. But the, Raj said, some of the, they didn't spend much time with the sheep they had in their pen, and they wouldn't follow for anything. And that's an excellent point. So, yeah, Matthew.
Well, I was just kind of thinking about what Jesus had said the chapter before. I feel like sheep leading sheep would also be like the blind leading the blind.
Yep.
You got to make sure you're following the shepherd, not another sheep.
Not a fellow. Exactly. That's a great point. It's very easy to do that. And that's the other thing we know about critters. If you can get the herd moving one way, that's where sheep dogs can do, you get the whole, they'll kind of follow each other to whatever. So it is important that we're trained. I'm just going to veer off for a second too on this. Have you guys ever noticed some of you guys that are athletes or on sports teams, or like, you block out the crowd. If you're smart, you learn to block out the voice of your parents. You block out everything, but you know whose voice you hear? Your coach. It can be this raucous setting, the gym's going crazy, and you're shooting your free throws, and you don't hear anything of the crowd. But when your coach says something, calls your name, you're trained to hear that, aren't you? It's the same principle here. These sheep hear the voice of their shepherd. And so, Jesus is that shepherd who came for his sheep by way of the cross. How does the shepherd issue his call for the sheep? Is he going to show up in front of your, in your room tonight? There's going to be some apparition. It's going to be like, let's see, who can I pick on here? Yeah.
Talia. Talia.
And you come into Dad's room and, yes, Dad, your servant is listening. I didn't call you.
Talia, Talia.
Must be Jesus. No, that's not the way Jesus calls us now, is it? How does he call us? Through the gospel, specifically. Through his word. And so, again, I don't have time to go into all this, guys, but the means by which God calls people is through the gospel, the preaching of the gospel. Sometimes, I'm no musician by any means, but I appreciate good music. I sometimes wish we had a little more, I could handle a little more lively music. But it's not about the music, though, is it? Like, that's not the way people get called to the truth. I can't find anywhere in the scripture where it says, through the foolishness of the song sung, or through the joke, you know, more than this. Yeah, the joke's told. Or, no, it's through the message preached. The Apostle Paul told the Corinthians, I didn't come to you superiority of speech, wisdom. I preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. He said, I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Because what you win people with is what you win them to. The gospel. The words of Christ. That's what calls people. Those are the words of the shepherd, the voice of the shepherd. And so let's talk about our responsibility a little bit. It says, when he puts forth all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. This is going to be a little bit on what Roger was talking about. Hey, in this case, guys, don't we have a responsibility to be in tune with the voice of our coach? To be paying attention and practices? If you're tuning your coach out in practice, you're not going to all of a sudden listen to him in the games. It's because you're used to listening to him for his instruction in all those practices. Hey, kids, if you're used to tuning out the voice of your mom when they're giving you daily chores or whatever, you know, however that goes, it's the same principle. Okay, we want to be in tune. How about us who are sheep for Christ? This is a great confidence verse that I have from that I just gives me confidence as I share the news with other people. Jesus says, everybody who's of the truth hears my voice. Hey guys, we got one responsibility on our end as far as taking the gospel. That's to know Jesus Christ and Him crucified. That's the message that we preach. Hey, we want to do our best, but it's not about the presentation. It's about the truth. And do us all well to remember that. Everybody's of the truth hears his voice. That's why, you know, I've had people actually ask me before, hey Luke, I got, you know, there's some people coming and they're, you know, they got a certain background and, you know, you've kind of been preaching on some of that stuff. Could you just back, you know, just tone it down a little bit so that give them a chance to hear. I'm always going to try to preach the truth in love, but I'm not going to. I have people all the time I Bible study with that walk in here. And if I start trying to think about where everybody's at and what's going to offend different people, you can't do that. I don't think Jesus did that. You tell the truth. I've had people mad at me. You've had people mad at you that you Bible study with. Maybe you were somebody that got mad at somebody else, but you cared about truth and you got through the mad to say, is this true? So you don't want to shift that, guys. Everybody, as it gives me confidence. Even sometimes, you know, some of you other guys are radical. You know, maybe you say some stuff, and maybe not quite the way I would say it. I don't walk out of here saying, man, I wish they would have done that different. I trust God. Everybody's of the truth, hears his voice. I'm not absolving us from, again, responsibility to do our best. But big picture, is this Jesus' church? So don't ever, ever, ever be afraid to tell the truth. Those who are of the truth hear Jesus' voice. So let's share His word. So, but here, for our part, the sheep follow Him because they know His voice. There's something called follow, isn't there? This is discipleship 101. Disciple follows. We hear and we follow. Let's go to Mark chapter 8. Mark 8, verses 34 and 35. I'll come back to you, Dave. Why don't you get both of those? Mark 8, 34 and 35.
And he summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it.
Hey, there's three quick points. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow. Guys, my whole life, I've enjoyed one way or another. I've had some patches where I haven't done, but I've enjoyed one way or another exercise and workout. And I found ability to push, the older I get, I'm not as motivated to push myself through certain things, but hey, an ability to push my body through things, it's kind of fun even, to be in control of your body, be able to push yourself through things. But you know what I found much more difficult? Is what Jesus talks about here. It's called deny yourself. The whole eating, nutrition thing, that's another story for me. I'll push my body, but you want me to not eat? That denial is a tough thing, is what I'm saying. By the way, a freebie for us as Christians, the grace of God, among other things, teaches us to deny ungodly desires. So denial is just, it's one of the first things. Deny yourself. Take up your cross. Hey, what was that door? The crucifixion and then the resurrection? There can be no resurrection without a crucifixion. If this almost sounds like Jesus wants us to, oh yeah, the next one, follow Him. If we follow Him, guess what we're willing to do all of a sudden? We're willing to lay down our lives, aren't we? For our brethren. When Christ is the shepherd, He's leading. And the sheep, each of us as sheep, we're leading. Whoever sheep is behind us, by following the shepherd, this thing really works right. There's a self-denial. There's a sacrifice. There's a caring about other people more than ourselves. That's what the church looks like. Guys, the Lord is building something here. We're a part of this. So I want to encourage all of us. You know, whether you're recognized as church leadership or whether you're a leader of the sheep that's right behind you, we follow the shepherd. Laying down our life, picking up a cross, none of that stuff's easy. But there's a resurrection. Guaranteed. So, I'll just close kind of with one last comment on this. There are many conflicting voices out there. Some old song, it doesn't seem old to me, but I know it's like old enough that I don't think my kids would probably remember it, but maybe from me listening to it, wasn't it? But it talks about the voice of truth. In the midst of these other things that say basically you can't and you're a loser but here's the voice of truth that comes through. Because there's all this other stuff. There's the crowd that's cheering against you and you can't do it. There's the earthly family, the parents trying to tell you what to do and what you can't do and you're crazy and you're all that stuff. You tune it out. There's one voice that matters. The voice of Jesus. We hear Him and we follow Him. Let's do it this week, huh? Let's follow.